Welcome to episode 3 of the Page 2 podcast. In today's episode, we talk to Salvatore Sura, senior SEO strategist at Angie's List. We talk about how Sal got into the industry, talk about his 20 to 30 years of experience doing SEO, how he got started, talk about what makes a good SEO. We dive into replatforming and duplicate content, site speed, and so much more. So get your popcorn ready for episode 3. I'm your host, Jacob Stoops, and this is the Page 2 Podcast. If you're looking for an SEO podcast where you get every trick in the book, this is not the podcast for you. In this podcast, we tell the personal stories of some of the industry's brightest minds. We discuss what life as an SEO is really like from an insider's perspective, swap stories about our greatest triumphs, failures, hopes, and frustrations, and we even go off script to talk about movies and pop culture. So sit back, relax, and enjoy some candid SEO conversations. Welcome to episode 3 of the Page 2 Podcast. I'm your host, Jacob Stoops. You can find me on Twitter, at Jacob Stoops. You can find me on LinkedIn, or you can find me on my personal website, jacobstoops.com/page2podcast. And in today's episode, we got to have a conversation with Salvatore Sura, senior SEO strategist at Angie's List. But before we bring Sal on, again, I just want to reiterate why I'm doing this podcast. So as I said in episode 2, there is no shortage of SEO podcasts that are focused on providing tips, providing resources, so on and so forth. And it's not that this podcast isn't going to do that. I think some of that will come out organically just through natural conversation. But I've always personally been fascinated with where SEOs come from, telling the different stories of how people get into SEO, how they get good at it, what trials and tribulations we go through, the effects of doing an SEO job, whether it be agency or in-house, on your personal life, mental health. So much can be explored there. And, you know, I just find it fascinating that people come from so many different places and yet end up in the same industry, an industry which is not really taught about in college. It's not like you can go to college to become an SEO. So many people get into it by accident, myself included. So I definitely think it's something worth exploring. It's a little bit different than your normal SEO podcast. Again, I do want to provide tips and I do want to provide things that people can take away and be actionable, but I also want to explore the behind the scenes stories to let other SEOs know what it's really like if you're considering getting into the industry, or to just let you know that, hey, you're not alone. This has happened to other people. And quite frankly, it's normal. So without further ado, we are going to bring Sal on. And the interesting thing about Sal is Sal and I had not met before. We actually met recently at a conference in Columbus, Ohio called Found Conference. And Sal and I were both speakers. I spoke on content and he spoke specifically on site speed. And Sal really stood out to me because of one, his expertise, two, his passion, and three, he found a way to make site speed in the technical design and architecturing process. He found a way to make it a requirement that pages load 3 seconds or less on a mobile connection, which is something I've never seen. And quite frankly, I'm quite envious because I've had personally such a hard time getting clients to take site speed seriously. So really wanted to dive into that. And that honestly made me remember Sal and want to interview him and find out more about how he actually got that in place, among other things. Sal's been in the industry for 20 to 30 years, so he's just a wealth of experience and a lot of great stories. And not only that, I did not think that we would be talking about Speed Racer in Star Wars and National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, which is one of my personal favorite Christmas movies, so we definitely dove headfirst into that. So we had an awesome discussion. So here's Sal. Part 1, The Life.
What was your position?
At first I was coming on the outside.
I was a sorcerer. What is that?
So what? One of us is a man.
No, I don't know. Tell me. Well, when the boss says push a button on a guy, I push a button.
So we are here with Sal Sura, Senior SEO Strategist from Angie's List. Sal, how you doing?
Great. How are you doing? Appreciate it.
Good.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. As I was kind of saying, before we jumped on, really appreciate it. It's hard to get a podcast up off the ground, and especially getting guests who are willing to come on when you're not yet established and when you don't yet have a lot of people listening. So definitely really, really appreciate that.
No worries. Thank you for having me. I'm like talking about SEO, and you know, when I get a chance to be around other people that get excited about it, it's fun sometimes to conversate. So I think it's a great idea, and welcoming the conversation.
Yeah. So Sal and I, we don't actually know each other. So we've only briefly met. We both spoke in Columbus, Ohio, which is where I'm from, at Found Conference about a month ago. And I reached out to Sal. He was willing to come on. So definitely looking to get into some really good and introspective conversations. So without further ado, just want to jump right into kind of the first segment, which I call the life, sticking with my quote unquote mob themes. A lot of people in the mob call it the life, making your bones, getting made. So my first segment here in episode number 3 is the life. So Sal, how did you get into SEO? What's your background?
Great question. So for me, it started in the 90s. I was working with some friends, some buddies, and we started a small little apparel company in the 90s, 95. And web was just barely coming on. My friends really didn't even know what the internet was at that time. But I suggested, well, we should have a website. So they're like, great, we don't know what that is. We don't know how to build it. I really didn't either. But I set out to learn, and through some help and several months of coding, I launched a website and got it launched in late 95. And, you know, we were really excited. Even had animation. I was doing animated GIFs in like 95, which was pretty cool. It was all hand coded. There was no programs or anything like that. So I learned HTML, which is really the backbone for SEO. I definitely think that was what gave me such a strong foundation, was learning the code to begin with. And we got it launched and we were really excited, but then realized nobody was finding it. And it's this kind of realization, like, well, it's out there, but how do people find the website? And so in 96, I set out to start making the site discoverable. Didn't even know what SEO was, never heard of the term. And Yahoo was the predominant search engine at that time, and AOL, a lot of people still optimized for AOL because many people thought the AOL browser and search bar was the internet at that time. I remember I had explained a bunch of times to my dad that AOL isn't the internet. There's Internet Explorer and other browsers you can use. So it was interesting those first couple years. You were submitting, your site manually to search engines. A lot of it was on the keywords and meta keywords tag, very basic rudimentary stuff. And then, late 90s, all of a sudden Google comes around, and, at first I kind of balked at it, like, well, what's a simple thing? It's just a silly search bar. And, I kind of dismissed it maybe for the first year or two, just like, this is not, but it kept picking up steam and kept coming along. And so finally, I think around 2000, maybe, I started looking at Google specifically, like, why isn't my site's ranking on Google where they're ranking everybody? They're ranking everywhere else, but not on Google. Why? What's going on now? And then started studying, the Google algorithm and started reading and learning more about how to rank for Google. And that's just continued ever since. So my journey started, kind of on a whim, and probably middle 2000s is when I started. I had kind of been helping consult people independently, clients that I knew that had businesses and some small companies, like mostly hospitality, hotels and restaurants. So I was helping them locally with their, at the time, SEO, not even realizing it. They were just paying me for marketing consulting, and it was mostly, you know, web consulting. But in 2000s, I think middle 2000s is when I started realizing there's actual positions for SEO, and that this is a real job, and that, you know, there's a career behind this. Started working as an SEO analyst, and then moved up to a specialist, and now, you know, I'm a strategist. And I love SEO. I can't imagine doing anything else at this point.
So you said you taught yourself HTML, and I find that is still, now SEOs come from everywhere, and it is possible, especially today, to be an SEO without knowing HTML, but I still feel like it's a very important rudimentary skill. How'd you do it?
Like I said, I mean, at the time there were no programs, so there was no Dreamweaver, you know, there was no design programs, tools. I basically had to code it on Notepad. And it was looking up a lot of tutorials. I had one buddy that knew web and showed me some HTML, taught me how to FTP, learned the basics of webmastering through a buddy, who's not even he's actually a telecom specialist, but at the time he was the only person that had access to the web. And him and myself were actually on the web in the 80s. So we used to dial up the web on the phone that you would take the actual phone receiver, stick it into the little box, like in the War Games with Matthew Broderick movie.
That's amazing.
And so we would do that. And we would dial up servers like they did in that movie, but try and play games and stuff. And there would be web addresses you would get in the back of magazines that you would type into the URLs. There was no browsers at the time. It was all just basic, you know, locations that you had to just know the URL address and type it in directly. This is like 87, 88. I was on, you know, Prodigy in 90, 91. So, you know, I kind of watched the birth of the internet in a way. And my buddy really is the one, his name is Matt Gilman. He great guy and super smart. I think he works for one of the telecom giants now. He really showed me how to get in and out of the internet. So when I started coding, he really taught me some of the basics of HTML, but a lot of it I just picked up on my own. And then over the years, I taught myself PHP, taught myself JavaScript, CSS. So just kept on going throughout the years. It's really the foundation for SEO, and I think gives you that language to be able to communicate when you're working in a teams, such as at the enterprise level, when you're talking to developers and engineers and designers and product managers, and you've really got to understand the site in a whole, and knowing HTML and being able to accurately explain what you're talking about, especially when you're getting into very technical stuff, you know, things like push state and URL changing and lazy loading and JavaScript server side, you really got to know what you're talking about in order to get the SEO right.
It's now
the foundation.
How did you end up at Angie's List?
Great question. So I was working for a large publishing company. They do mostly men's magazines. You've probably heard of some of them, Motor Trend.
Yep.
Lowrider, Hot Rod, a bunch of those. So I was working as a senior specialist for them for many years. And a great colleague that I worked with alongside him, Byron Hardy, who was speaking at the same conference that we met at, was also a senior specialist there. And he had moved on from Motor Trend a couple years before me, and he was out here working with Angie's List, gave me a call. One day I get a call from him. I'm in Orange County, Southern California, beautiful weather. Get a call from Byron to go to In-N-Out Burger, you know, like you do in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I realized about 30, 40 minutes into it, like, I'm like, hey, are you trying to recruit me to come out to Indiana? I'm like, no way, man. Like, you're crazy. That's not going to fly with the family. After mulling it over for a couple months and talking to the family, it started to make more sense, and been out here ever since. It's been 2 years, and we love it. It's a great company to work for, and doing some really fun stuff in SEO there.
Yeah, Midwest values.
Yep.
So where are you originally from then?
Oh, man. So originally from Pittsburgh. So
I'm, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, so about 5 hours from here. So I grew up in Pittsburgh, but then spent 30 years in California. So I've got the best of both. Now I'm in the middle, which is a completely different change, but really refreshing. I can't see myself going back to California at this point. Like, this is home now. Like, family loves it here, and it's great being out here. We're, you know, it's good value for land, and everything's nice and cheap, and I'm like, this is the place to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, so I'm a Browns fan, right? Very tortured by the Steelers.
Oh,
tortured
oh.
Browns fan. So
yeah, I'm single-handedly the reason like you've lost coaches.
Right. Hugh Jackson. Anyways, so back to the subject at hand. So throughout your time in SEO, which now it seems like it's spanned 20 or 30 years, can you tell me about some of your successes, and then I want to get into like some of your failures or oh shit moments.
Yeah, no crap. I'm happy to talk about those too. One that comes into mind was a movie thing. So here's something for you. About 10 years ago or so, a great movie came out called Speed Racer.
Okay.
And so when they did the remake of Speed Racer, a person that I knew gave me a call and said, hey, I'm working on this movie, and we have the merchandise for it. We own the merchandising rights, but when you type in Speed Racer hats and Speed Racer shirts and Speed Racer merchandise, we don't come up, but all the people that are selling us do. Can you help us? And I'm like, Speed Racer? Of course, yeah, go Speed Racer. So I got on board, recoded their whole site, optimized. They were using, which cart was that? Oh, man, there's so many. It's going to come to me. Which cart? This is before Magento. This was like over a decade ago. It was X-Cart? Was it an X-Cart? It was one of the carts. Some e-commerce platform.
Yeah, there are so many.
Not optimized at all. Most of their failures were just in the setup, you know. So it was just getting in there, adding keywords, doing, you know, the basic stuff. And sure enough, within a few weeks, just before the movie launched, they're ranking number one for Speed Racer hats, Speed Racer shirts, Speed Racer everything. They were loving it, racking in huge sales. Unfortunately, the movie tanked. and shortly after, the merchandise really wasn't selling, but not because they weren't ranking, just because nobody wanted it.
Yeah.
But it was great because I got to go to the movie premiere. I got to sit in the Mach 5.
Wow.
It was a great. I got to meet Peter Fernand, the original voice of Speed Racer.
Wow.
So it was a great event and one of the best projects I've ever been on in terms of the way it came together and the payoff at the end. It was just phenomenal. I've had some nice little wins, you know, in between there, but that one always kind of stands out because as a kid, I just wanted to hit that button and fly the Mach 5.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's funny. I've had similar experiences with respect to wins, but nobody's ever let me sit in Speed Racer's car, right? I worked, did some work for Ritz-Carlton, and I didn't get comped a hotel room. So getting to go to a movie premiere just for being an SEO, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Can't beat that one. That one's hard to top on for me too. It was a great experience. So now I get to work with great brands like Angie's List, and
yep.
You know, I get some nice lunches, and we went out to the K1 speed track a couple weeks ago for a little fun day. And so there's some nice little wins in there too, which I'm pretty happy about.
Tell me about the opposite side. Tell me about like an epic failure. We've all had them.
I'll be happy to tell one. I just actually let out for the Halloween horror stories. I think somebody did a piece on the Halloween horror stories, and one of those was mine. So I'm working with Motor Trend, and this one's tough. Tough to talk about. It hurts. So we had just released a new tool that I pushed for. It was a way to be able to control templates. It was like a CMT that allowed me to add certain metadata to templates that, because you're talking about an enterprise site where, you know, a single template controls millions of pages. And so we were going through optimizing templates. I accidentally checked a box that I shouldn't have checked. And that threw a nice little meta no index tag.
Oh, the worst.
So that hit our content template, which was the primary driver of traffic for a content site. Unfortunately, when that goes out, the impact isn't felt right away. So you don't notice it for a couple days because you just start trending down.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, why are we trending down? And so it takes a couple of days to really notice that there's a problem. And then by the time that, then there's also a few more days before you can really deploy a fix. So a good week and a half goes by. And every day I'm sweating if I got a job. Like I'm waiting to show up every day with my box sitting on my desk. Because I know every day that this is out. I'm killing the visibility of an enterprise site that's relying on their traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurt. So by the time it got redeployed, and then now you've got everything no indexed. So now you have to wait for everything to get re-indexed. You've got a stretch there of a couple weeks that you're just watching the recovery go so slow. It's painful. And thankfully, my boss, who really believed in me at the time, and actually he's one of my mentors, who I was going to talk about later on, Lior Zitzman. He really stuck behind me and supported me, and he kind of said, like, this was something that wasn't intentional. It was just a simple mistake. We were actually trying to no index templates that we didn't want to be indexed. So we were trying, we were doing the right thing. Unfortunately, that one template wasn't labeled correctly, so it got no indexed. Anybody could have made the mistake, and unfortunately it was me that pushed the button. So I sucked it up and I was like, okay, but in the end the traffic recovered, and we had to just make a little mention on that quarterly report to our stockholders why traffic was a little off in that quarter. They didn't mention me by name, which is great.
Yeah, so I think I've had a few of those. Luckily, you kind of knew what was wrong. There are, yeah. I feel like, many times where things just take a downturn and you're trying to figure out, is it something I did with my site? Is it the algorithm?
And yeah, somebody else changed.
Sometimes, yeah, you never get to answer that question. When I was working at startups.co not so long ago, we were trending really, really, really well from a traffic standpoint. And then this April, just Google changed their algorithm. All of a sudden, like, nothing was really wrong with the site. They just started valuing and nothing changed. We made some quality changes after we started to see a downturn. But I started working with startups in April of last year. So this is 2017. And it took us almost all the way down to where we were when I started. And I was like, I've been working on this for a year and a half, and Google,
building it up,
stroke of the pen, just completely knocks me out. And, we were slowly building it back up and building it back up. And it took a couple of months, and there wasn't like a silver bullet. The site did use React and had a few issues around the time of the algorithm update with rendering, JavaScript and
right.
pre-rendering and that whole thing.
Right.
A lot of
problems. We're doing that right now. I know the pain, man. We're going through
it. Yeah. So it can be painful if your site, and we were using pre-render.io for quite a while.
You're looking at that too.
Unfortunately, like that service just decides every once in a while to just drop and stop rendering your pages. So one of our really awesome developers there developed an in-house pre-rendering solution that didn't drop. But that had its blips. Anyways, long story short, we went almost down to where we originally were. And on my last day, Google made an algorithm change, literally my last day, and things not only shot back up, but they're breaking records. And it's really nice to kind of see, even though I'm gone, I can still look at the analytics and just watch
things. You did the right things. You did the right by them.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing. I think that to me is always the most, like, I want to be able to look at them the next day, you know, a client or whoever I'm working with. Like, I just want to make sure I steered them in the right direction with the best knowledge that I had, and that, you know, the end goal, we're always trying to think of the user and what the right thing is. And we're, you know, there was definitely a time early 2000s where I would play a little bit in the Black Hat arena. You know, I had an account on Black Hat World, and, you know, I was working with an agency where we did a little burn and churn, and working in some of the industries, the tougher ones, like payday loans and education and credit repair and debt. Like, I've ranked sites on that first page, and that was hard. And you would burn them and churn them. You know, it was a couple months and get that one up, and it would burn. But in that time, we would be raking, you know, for those few months, and we would just spin up another site, duplicate everything again, and it would just be burn and churn. And but now that was more than a decade ago, and now today I won't even work for a brand that isn't recognizable. Now I only want to work for companies that have the right intentions in mind, that want to do the right things, and want to get sound advice. And not, I still hear from companies all the time that want to, like, do Black Hat or aggressive things, and they're asking me for advice. I'm like, I would say don't. Like, you're pushing your luck.
Yeah, I once interviewed with a company before I went to startups that they were kind of doing it themselves, and they mentioned that in the interview. That was their strategy, and I just, like, that's when things get a little bit awkward in the interview, where, like, you can't just, maybe it's not a fit for me. Good luck.
Yeah, me neither. I can't. Sorry. Like, I know where this is going to go, and we may not have jobs next month.
Exactly. So, the industry, what do you love about it, and what do you hate about it?
You know, I love the challenge. I, you know, some people hate the fact that, like, things are always changing, and that, like you said, like, I come in today and nothing happened. Like, what? Why am I down? I love that aspect of it, that it's not the same thing every day, that I get to come in and see what happened, see what changed, figure it out, what's going on, what's different. I love that aspect of it, and that I'm always being challenged. If I got bored, I'm out. I think that's why I've been hooked so long to SEO.
Yep.
It's like the never ending game. It's, you know, I'm a video gamer, and like, I feel like I'm just on this, like, never ending, you know, EVP world or something, where I'm like, I'm like master of my domain, and every day is like a new challenge. And so, I love that aspect of it, that it's always changing, and that you can't count on what you know yesterday to be true tomorrow, and vice versa. So, like, but at the same time, I think that's what makes this industry so challenging, is that there's no standards. There's no education system. There's really no credentials you could get. There's really no one source. And so what works for you may not work for them, may not work for this industry, may not work for the site, may not work. You know, I mean, there's every you know, site and industry is a little bit different. And so, you know, and everybody's got strategy. Everybody can do something, but not everybody's doing the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And there's no, like, uniformity to it. And so, you know, that aspect, I would love to be able to teach the next generation and have some, you know, some groundwork foundations that we can, and yeah, we have certain things, like, we know the basic ranking factors and stuff, but even those are all speculated. And I mean, other than that one time where Gary said, you know, the most important things are links, content, and rank brain. I mean, we really, you know, so there's this uncertainty always with it that, you know, you can't go to college and learn SEO. I mean,
it's we talked about that in the last episode. Like
who's going to write a book? You can't write a book.
We can teach SEO at college because there's no colleges that are really teaching it. All the people that come out of college, they don't know SEO. They know traditional marketing.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And then they just have to happen into it and they have to just learn and put their feet to the fire. And so that part's challenging and tough a little bit. There's no standards. So you got good and bad and you've got somewhere in the middle too. So
Yeah. So I don't know if you've ever spent any time in what I call agency world. So like most of my SEO career, so I've been in an agency now 3 times and I've been in-house twice. And I'll say I like agency life a little bit more, just for some reason suits me a little bit better than in-house. But we run up against, there's kind of 2 common things that we run up against. One, when you're working with somebody or when you're working with a client or when you're pitching a client, you've always got the other agencies, because they're trying to win business too, undercutting you. We had a client that we're working with, and and it always happens when either the client or the agency, they don't quite understand the dynamics and what's going on kind of behind the scenes and why certain things are happening and why other things are not happening. But you will have a client come to you and say, hey, my boss had agency XYZ come and look at it, and they're saying that we are missing our meta tags and stuff like that, and so on and so forth. So you've always got people trying to kind of undercut you without really understanding kind of the dynamics of what's going on. And I get it. That part's frustrating. I ran into something 2 days ago where a company asked us to look at the work that another company had done, and because they weren't sure what to make of it, to quote unquote audit their audit. So we got their audit and we looked at it, and it was, they wanted to pay us money to audit this thing. And within 5 minutes, it was like, oh my God, I can't believe somebody actually charged money for delivering
this
work. And like, you can't do anything with this and you paid money. So that's incredibly frustrating. Yeah. You do have people out here that are trying to do it correctly and trying to deliver value. And maybe those people thought that they were delivering value. Like, I don't think that they intentionally delivered poor work, but you're right. There are no standards. There's no kind of, there's no minimum, you know, viable product. There's no minimum threshold. So it's still, unfortunately,
what is an audit?
As much the Wild West as it was probably 20 years ago. It's crazy.
Yeah, right. Is an audit, you know, and what do companies expect, and what you get from one is different from another. And yeah, you really don't know. And I actually saw a tweet, I think yesterday, about this, and a little conversation on Twitter. An agency was tweeting out that, you know, maybe it's time to get past the all audits, the full audits, and get
monthly
recommendation audits. And I was like, you know what? That's probably more, more helpful, because things are just evolving, and what you're doing right now may change in 2 months. And so to be able to pivot and be agile is probably adopting an agile strategy for SEO is probably the right way to go, and set up SEO more into like sprints or buckets like that, rather than all at once and just throw it at them.
Yeah. You know, and I saw that tweet, and I saved it. I liked it, and I forget who tweeted it out. So hopefully I can like credit them later when I go back.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of it too. And it's not coming to my head.
But it did. That was one of the few tweets that made me kind of stop dead in my tracks and just reevaluate, like, as an agency, like this is just what you do. You win a client and you say, all right, we're going to go into our foxhole for the next 2 months. And when we come out of it, we're going to have all these
tiny recommendations
that'll solve all your problems. And then you come out of it and all your technical recommendations, the company looks at you and says, great, we can get those in 9 months or 10 months or 11 months.
Right. It's like, we're like, you know, you had something after 2 days that you could have showed them and get started.
Exactly. It really made me rethink, like, should we be doing that? Should we just go away for a month auditing? Like, we have to audit, but should we break it down into smaller sprints? Would that be more effective? Who knows? But it was a really good thought.
I thought so too. I saw that. I was like, you know what? I don't do any. I started with agency work as well, but now I'm all in house. But yeah, it made me really kind of think too that, like, wow, what a smart idea. Yeah, because I do some side work with clients, and I've done those audits, and I've just thrown them all at them, and they're like, oh my God, and they're overwhelmed, and where do we begin? It's like, yeah, okay, just start with these couple things. You know, and, you know, I give them this long laundry list, and it winds up me just telling them, yeah, do these couple things to start with. So even though I've taken all this time to do all this, they just want to know, like, okay, what do I need to do right now? And then tell me the next thing, and then tell me the next thing.
Yeah.
So I almost think too that, yeah, that made me reevaluate how, you know, I might be doing it going forward with some of these clients and, you know, not charging them up front for this huge production and just getting right into it and starting with some simple tasks that can be done fairly quickly and start seeing some wins. Cause you know, that longer dev cycle, you know, after a first month and 2 months, hey, they're looking at where's those results. Where, you know, how come we're not moving up yet? You know, every time I start with a new client within a month, they're like, oh, I'm not like ranking number one yet. It's like, dude, it takes a couple months. It doesn't happen like over. Yeah. If you have overnight success, I'd be worried about you because you're probably going to tank. Like that's the first sign that you're tanking. So, you know, I always try to like temper the expectations, but then you know how it is. Like 2 months in, they're already like, hey, hey, hey. It's like, well, we're still waiting for these dev things to happen. Like, how do you, I don't just sprinkle a little magic on the SERPs and then you magically rank. Like, unless this work happens, nothing is going to, like, I can point a couple more links at you, which might help a little bit. But, you know, like, unless you get these technical things figured out or whatever is going on, you can't expect improvement until, like, the dev work. So, yeah, tempering expectations is always a challenge a little bit. And even in-house sometimes. But I think I get a little more leeway because, you know, we're all part of the same team. So when we're like, you know, this is our depth, this is what the roadmap is. This is what the, you know, I can't push anything into the roadmap. So as much as I would like to, I got a lot of stuff I want to do. I can't get it in.
Yeah, no, that's that. And the other frustrating part of that is when the easiest way to get something in is to try to type revenue increase to it. And that's also, especially when you look at some of the minute changes that you're making.
Yeah, it's a risk.
It's you know, almost impossible to accurately forecast what revenue will be when you go from position 10 to position 1. It's at best a crapshoot.
Yeah, and then if you start adding those projections, and now you're going to be held to that. You know,
yes.
And if you don't hit it, then now you're accountable. So it's a slippery slope, but it's one we have to kind of tread on sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you want to get stuff done. So you mentioned, forget the name. Who is your mentor? Who do you want to pay homage to right now?
Lior Zitzman. I think he was our director of SEO over at Motor Trend. He was one that, you know, really kind of initially recruited me in. I was an analyst at the time working at an agency. Gave me a shot working in-house on brand and you know, I really appreciated it so much. And ever since, I've learned so much because I had that agency experience and I worked on lots of sites. We did that burn. I mean, I really got my experience there, but working in an enterprise brand level just really kind of saw the other side of it and really helped me grow and take it to the next level. And, worked under him for 7 years.
That's a long
taught
time.
Me a lot of great stuff. We bounced a lot of ideas off. We pushed the envelope all the time with push state and JavaScripting and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, maximize our views and impressions. And we did some wonderful things together and, I appreciated that time. I haven't had a chance to really get that strong of a working relationship since then, but, he really, in the SEO world, you know, you don't get too many people where you can sit back and just, you know, talk about things and go into different tangents. And I've got some really good friends too, back in California that were pretty nice. I was in part of some semantic groups where we used to have some good discussions, but, you know, on a daily basis, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, that's great. And, you know, the funny thing for me, as I try to think of the people that I look up to. Some of the people I don't even know, like the Rand Fishkins of the world.
Oh, sure. Bill Slosky, Aaron Bradley, Glenn Gabe.
Yeah.
You know, these are definitely people I currently rely on for their information. Glenn Gabe has an enormous amount of sites that he monitors,
mm-hmm.
and what he does with the quality algorithms is phenomenal, and tracking his information is I think vital right now.
Yeah.
There's definitely a few people that, you know, Bill Slosky, who I've had the pleasure of I was actually in part of his semantic group down in San Diego. I've been down to his house before. He's a great guy, very humble, fun to be around. Him, Barbara Starr, a bunch of them down there, wonderful people, always pushing, you know, what people understand and know for SEO. So yeah, I think, you know, their work is incredible, and has really helped me, you know, a lot in my job, in my world.
The flip side of that is, because those are all well-known people, some of the best SEOs that I've met and that have helped me grow the most, people you've never heard of.
Yeah.
And not only that, people that are younger than me, like much younger than me, which is like, again, it goes back to like, how did you learn so much so quickly? And it's just amazing. And I think one of the things that I was thinking about the other day is that sometimes I tend to give too much credit to, or assume that people that are way older than me know more, and that people that are way younger than me know less. And
sure.
I run into all the time where I find people that are vastly younger than me are so much further along than when I was at that place in my career, or are even further along than me in my current place. And then there are other people that are older who I thought and I held in very high esteem that maybe just didn't, you know, when you meet them in person, it just didn't quite come through like I would have expected. Yeah. So it's really interesting, the dynamics of where people come from in this industry, how old or young or whatever, it really doesn't matter. From an age standpoint, it really doesn't matter and really doesn't impact how awesome somebody is at their job and how well they can influence other people. So yeah, that's been something I've found interesting.
And I think that's part of the fact that the industry changes so much that, mm-hmm. you know, you could be doing this industry for 15 years, but if you kind of sit back for, you know, 6 months and, you know, aren't really on top of it for, you know, a year, you're pretty much, you know, out of it. Whereas somebody who just got in 6 months ago, if they're on top of the latest stuff and they're watching the latest trends and what's going on, yeah, they could quite easily be just as knowledgeable or more knowledgeable than somebody who's been doing it for much longer. And so I think in this industry, you know, current, you know, information is so much more vital that, you know, really, I think young, old, new, you know, that's what makes this industry, I think, different than any other industry where, you know, you have to do something for years to really master it.
Mm-hmm.
I think in this industry, you know, if you really put your nose to it, you know, you could really master it in 6 to 8 months. And if you stay on top of it, you know, within a couple of years, you're just as skilled as any person that's been doing it for, like myself, 2 decades. You know, I would be perfectly comfortable handing over, you know, sites to, you know, somebody who's only been doing it for a couple of years if I saw that their, you know, understanding and expert level was capable of it. So, yeah, this industry is different from most others.
Part 2, Making Your Bones.
So let's move into the next segment. So got to make your bones. So drop a knowledge bomb on me. Tell me something I don't know, or tell people something that they don't know, something that you've had success with that maybe you wouldn't think of right off the bat.
Duplicate content doesn't really hurt.
Yeah? Why?
I think over the last, especially in the local markets, I think if you're in a local space, I think I've seen now just in the recent algo changes, probably in the last 6 months, for local queries, local businesses that have similar content on multiple location pages are still ranking, are ranking just fine, even over national directories such as ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite surprising. And when we look at it further, the content's about 80% duplicate, but there's still unique information on that page because it's a location page. But like their services offered and their FAQs are all the same. So in that sense, it's mostly duplicate. It's literally the exact same text verbatim on, you know, dozens of pages, but it's not hurting their rankings at all. And they're doing really fine.
So are you saying it works now, might not work in the future, or you think it'll work in the future too?
I think with those local, if you're a local business and the query relevancy looks for local relevance, then I think that entity will come up regardless. So I think it's something that's probably here to stay. Because in a lot of cases, you know, some of these small companies and mom and pop shops, they're not SEO savvy. They don't have team of devs. They just throw up a site and they walk away and they go to their job. They go to their service call. They do whatever they need to do. Google knows that these people aren't like, yeah, the big companies can hire agencies and the big companies have in-house teams, but most of these small businesses across the country, you know, don't have teams of people and can't do this stuff. And I think they've adapted to that. And if they see that you know, particular users in that market and looking for that service or that product or that, you know, whatever, Google's going to rank that, you know, if it's relevant. I think if, regardless if that content is on, you know, dozen of their same, you know, they have that same content on like a dozen of their location pages or various pages. I see that now probably going to be relevant for a while.
So my gears are spinning here. So I'm thinking of the Angie's List website, and I'm thinking of how big it must be, and how, given what you just said, it's probably heavily dynamic because there's probably no way.
Right.
User-generated content that a single person can go through, and nor would you want to touch every single page. So what is it like to work on a massive website where most of the content is out of your control?
It's a little challenging. You can really only look at the surrounding, you know, factors, the wrappers, the metadata. Linkage is extremely important. You know, so a lot of the factors are out of your hands. You know, but we're constantly combing through those data sets. It's mm-hmm. going through those various data sets, that the variables that are populating that data. So we're constantly fine tuning those and maybe making variations. You know, we'll add, if we see a certain word is being semantically related to something else, we may, you know, incorporate some of that somewhere into that data set. So it's really combing through a lot of the data. It's very tedious work. You're getting a lot of Excel spreadsheets and doing a lot of keyword analysis and, you know, figuring out if you're using the right combination or if you're cannibalizing something. Because in our kind of segment, you know, you might have two things that could easily be semantically a patio and a porch, a deck, you know, but we have a page for each one of these. How much difference are there and how much semantic? So we see that where like one gets a lot more searches for the exact same thing as the other one. So we know Google's already semantically related these two things together. Oh, and so having two separate pages doesn't actually help. And we have to, you know, look at those variations all the time and looking at our data sets and really trying to fine tune it.
So one of the things to switch gears a little bit, one of the things that you said that really, because I'm a huge site speed person, right? I've been preaching it for a long time, and I could tell at Found Conference that you were extremely passionate. But one of the things I think that set your passion apart is that you've actually implemented a site speed check Q&A system into your dev team cycle, which must be magic, because I've never, ever, ever been able to do that. And I've had the hardest time getting development teams to take site speed seriously, even in this day and age. How'd you
get it? I can't take credit for it. Luckily, we have a great CTO who actually started in the SEO department with HomeAdvisor almost 20 years ago.
Oh, man.
So we have a pretty strong support up the chain. And so this directive actually came down from him. So when your CTO says performance is a big thing and we're going to make this a mandate, it becomes a mandate and SEO just sit back and roars. We championed it and we were like, yes, this is great. So we had kind of like, you know, asked about it a couple times and like him coming from that background, he knew the importance of it. So as soon as he put his foot in the ground, everything just started rolling and now it's part of our process. We have regular checks now. We keep things at a strict quota. So you want something on there, something's got to come off. And it's been very efficient for us, and we've seen some nice gains from that.
So how many seconds and what size do the pages have to be?
So right now we're looking to load our site. Our pages have to load under 4 seconds for 4G network.
Oh, my God.
And 50 requests.
My language.
50 requests is our cap. No more than 50 requests per page and a size of 500 kilobytes. So we're really trying to maximize our because mobile is still right now it's our primary source of traffic. It's about 60% of our traffic.
Yeah.
And in a lot of markets right now, 4G is still I think for a large portion, I think it was like 40% of our market right now. Because a lot of them are in small towns and small areas, and so a lot of them are still on 4G, and so we felt that it was a great thing all around.
And have you guys seen any? When did you start doing this?
So we kicked it off back in second quarter, so probably around April, May, and we started really getting everything out there around May and then end of May, June, and we started seeing gains right away. Performance really does matter. Conversions went up. It's a nice win, and it seems so easy, but yet it was so hard.
Yeah.
I mean, we struggled there for weeks trying to figure out, you know, how to make certain things perform better. And once you make some hurdles and some big gains, it feels really rewarding. And then you want to do, it almost becomes like, almost like cracking away. You want more. Mm-hmm. You're like, I want to get this faster. How much more? And then people started buying in and it became kind of almost like a challenge. Like, what else can we do? What else can we tweak?
Yeah.
And so now it's almost become, you know, in our company, part of our culture a little bit, like, you know, let's see how much can we change this. In fact, we have still releases coming out where we tweak down our homepage logo a little bit more because we optimized it for an extra few more, you know, hundreds of a millisecond. I mean, so we're still trying to push it.
Yeah. I have a lot of painful stories when it comes to site speed. So this is like near and dear to my heart, music to my ears. So I, three years ago, I would say, sat in a room with a really, really large client, I think Fortune 100 or 500, something like that. Very, very big. Well, you would know them. And I said, all right, all of your top pages average 8 to 10 seconds load times, some worse. And if you improve just to 5 seconds, you don't even have to be good. Just get to 5 or 6 seconds. You will make hundreds of millions of dollars just from doing that. And they laughed me out of the room. They literally just looked at me, laughed, and stopped taking me seriously. But then somebody else came into the company and said, hey, we need to look at that. And they brought in the whatever consultant worked with the famous Walmart case study.
I was going to say Walmart. What about Walmart?
They brought those people in, and those people corroborated it. And finally, after a while, they realized, hey, Jake was right. Jake was right. So, you know, and it's a long dev cycle. So it's took a while for them to start kind of get the gears in motion. But I'll never forget the feeling of saying this is like the biggest recommendation I've ever laid on anybody ever. And I got laughed out of, with the most conviction and certainty that I've ever had, laughed out of the room.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah. So what tools do you use? What's in your tool?
Good question. I think my best friend is Screaming Frog, for sure. I'm probably using Screaming Frog more than any other tool. And then, you know, GSC is valuable. Mm-hmm. What I'm recently getting into is the Data Studio, Google's beta Data Studio, where I've connected GSC with that. You could build filters into your GSC data, which can give you so much more than, you know, what you'd get from the standard GSC.
Yep.
I could build segments and target things. And so using Data Studio to mine GSC data is extremely helpful, and Screaming Frog. You know, I've got access to most of the tools. I've got access for Ahrefs and Moz. I'm certified for Search Metrics. I'm certified for Demand Crawl, for Gint. I mean, there's abundance of them. They all kind of do the same thing for me. I just want a crawler, crawl my site, tell me what my errors are. What's great about some of those tools is that you can automate it and then you get alerts and stuff. I still prefer the manual crawls. Like if I need to crawl something, I'm just going to crawl it.
Got to get your hands dirty to know the site.
Yeah. And I'll connect the GSC and connect GA and pull data in. I love using extraction. I'll extract stuff out of there. You know, I pretty much mine anything I can out of a page, and it all comes from Screaming Frog. I would say that's probably my number one tool.
Nice. We just renewed our licenses actually today. So it's funny you mentioned that. I use Screaming Frog a lot, quite a bit as well. And we're also looking at a bunch of different enterprise tools. Ahrefs is my personal favorite, but there are a lot of great tools out there. It's interesting that there's not any one tool that does it all. So SEOs are kind of forced into using a plethora, you know, being tool agnostic. So,
I have to admit too, there's a couple crawling tools enterprise that we're looking at right now. On Crawl, obviously Deepcrawl. Yep. And you know, what's great about them is you could even set up alerts for your competitors. Mm-hmm. You know, and so if your competitors change or you change or you know, something, you know, you can connect it with certain metric points. So if it hits a certain threshold, you can get alert. So there's some, you know, we're starting to look at some of those crawling tools. We might be getting one of those coming in here soon. We were using Demand Crawl for a while from Ginza, but it just doesn't give us that much. Ginza's tool is great. It certainly reports back errors and some really good information. But, you know, we were just kind of looking to see what else is out there. And in fact, right now we're even beta testing Ginza's new speed crawl. So they have a new speed tool. I think we mentioned that at the conference.
Yep.
And so we're beta testing that right now with some URLs where it's going to like use the API for Lighthouse and web page test and pull back daily performance metrics and send us alerts if anything should get out. Because right now we're kind of pulling them manually. So they're like, we can do that for you. And we're like,
that's
okay, let's check it out.
It's a long process.
Yeah. So some of these tools are pretty helpful. I'm also a huge Search Metrics fan.
Okay.
I think they have probably some of the best keyword data in the industry. You know, whenever there's a big algorithm change, everybody's looking for them for their winners and losers.
Yep.
Because they definitely have the biggest index of keywords. I worked with them really closely for years at Motor when I was with Motor Trend. We actually helped them build some of their beta, some of their tools, like their content analysis tool, and some of their things kind of came from myself and Lior.
Nice.
Yeah, I think Search Metrics is of SEO tools. I they're kind of pricey, but well worth it, I think.
Yeah, I've dabbled in their tool a little bit, but I'm more, like I said, Ahrefs, SEMrush, Life, Bright Edge, Moz,
sure. Majestic is also a wonderful tool for obviously backlinks, but everybody just uses the Majestic API so you can get the same data and other tools. But
best advice for people just getting into the industry?
Read. Be prepared to read. Read and study. Study. Yeah. Test. I mean, just test things. I mean, you put up a site. Build a site. Play with it, point some links at it, change the metadata, test things out. I mean, that's for years, that's really what I got to do through the late 90s and yeah. early 2000s was, and I still have a couple dozen sites I run on my own. I'm into fantasy sports, so I have a fantasy sports blog, and if you don't have your own sites, then you're probably doing it wrong. You know, yeah. like if you're going to be in the industry, you should probably have your own domains, your own FTPs, and you should be, you know, trying things out, seeing where things rank, play with stuff, do a lot of reading, do some testing. I think A/B testing is great. We do a lot of indexation tests, change a meta title in a certain market, see how it performs, mm-hmm. Change a link, change things around. So I think testing all the time is extremely valuable because that's where you're getting your next information from. Read, test, and just keep trying is probably the best I can say.
Awesome. No, that's great advice. I think I've given the same advice quite a few times, and I've even helped a few people set up their own websites when they didn't know how. So yeah, no, that's excellent, excellent advice. Moving,
and, you know, not just learn and obviously learn WordPress because that's the
yes.
primary CMS.
WordPress,
out there.
Man, that got me into the industry.
Don't be afraid. Be an expert on WordPress for sure. Learn mm-hmm. WordPress. Go to their seminars. Go to a couple WP conferences or local meetup or whatever. Learn WordPress for sure. But don't be afraid to learn other CMSs. Like right now, we at Angie's List, we use Drupal.
Yep.
And I've used Joomla and I've used Pyro and I've used there's so many of them. There's a plethora of them out there, and yeah. some good, some bad. I even optimized a Weebly site.
Wow.
Weebly was basic, but it gave you some SEO tools.
Yeah.
don't be afraid to learn CMSs because everybody's using a CMS today. And yeah, WordPress is the dominant one, but got to get your fingers wet in some of the other ones so that you know what is the good and the bad, and be able to make recommendations as far as what you're seeing out there.
Part 3, Getting Made.
We are about to induct you into this memorable family of Coast CrossFit. That means you are to place this brotherhood above God, above government, above family. You understand?
Let's jump into the last section, the fun sure. section. So time to get your button, time to get made, join the Page 2 podcast, quote unquote, family. So
awesome.
What's a personal fact about you that most people don't know?
Let's see. I've been on a couple game shows. I've won
really?
The Family Feud. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait. The Ray Combs, the Steve Harvey, the Drew Carey.
The Louis Anderson.
Louis Anderson. Oh, I missed him. Okay. All right.
This was almost 20 years ago.
Okay.
My wife was 8 months pregnant at the time. We were on the Family Feud with my brother, my dad, and my mother-in-law. And my wife and my brother, man, kicked butt at the end, and we took home the big prize. We won.
So what happened? Like, what happens when you win?
It was great, man. We won. And you don't get any money right there, but when the show airs, after the show airs, you get your money 90 days later, and we all got
really?
Big fat checks in the mail. And
oh my goodness!
It was a great, great Christmas.
What kind of questions did you get asked? Like what do you remember from that? That's amazing.
Yeah. One of the things was like, how do you get ketchup out of a bottle? One of them was what women typically call men.
Okay.
So a couple of good ones, but my wife and my brother, man, they're such polar opposites that we put them in the final because we're like, they're never gonna get the same. Like,
oh, yeah.
they're gonna answer differently. So like at first, because it was me and my wife's idea to go on. And so at first I was like, I wanna be in the final. They're like, no, you and your wife are too much alike. You guys are gonna answer the same thing. So we put my brother up there who's opposite of me, and sure enough, they didn't have one duplicate answer.
Wow.
And we nailed it we didn't even need the last couple. We nailed the 200 so quick.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I've actually been on a couple game shows. So I was a part of the game show circuit. I've also won on Let's Make a Deal. I've won on Shop Till You Drop. I've won on Krypton Factor. So, yeah, I was on the game show circuit there for a while. You're allowed to do one per year.
Man, wait, how do they know?
They keep a record. Yeah, you're on record. Yeah, you're on a record.
Okay, all right.
So, yeah, they're only allowed to do one per year.
Wow. Well, I didn't think I'd be talking about Speed Racer, nor did I think I would be talking about Family Feud in the Louis Anderson version. The Steve Harvey version, I think, is hilarious. But
oh, we wanted to go back so bad because now it's 20 grand. So when we were on, it was only 10 grand, and you were only allowed to do one episode. So even though we won, we weren't allowed to get another shot, where now you get to come back 5 days, and it's 20 grand.
Man.
So we could have, like, we only got 10 grand.
Yeah.
We could have kept this going for
jeez,
a couple more episodes. We would have been
like that guy that was on Jeopardy for like 30 days or whatever.
Yeah. We've been trying to get back on there.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And if for nothing else, Steve Harvey is like a national treasure and he's hilarious.
Oh, he's so funny. So funny.
Okay. Well, I don't know how to segue to that, but desert island movies, right? So you're stranded on a desert island. You only have 5 movies that you can watch for the rest of your life. Go.
Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back.
Okay, I was going to say, you only get one.
I can only get one Star Wars. Definitely Empire Strikes Back. Do the Right Thing. Weird Science. Boy. Yeah, getting tough now. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I could watch that all day. That there's an RV.
Cousin Eddie.
And you know what? I'd have to take a Dumb and Dumber, too, because that original Dumb and Dumber. Throw another shrimp on the barbie. I just want to laugh. If I'm on a desert island forever, give me a little excitement, give me a little adventure, and then let me laugh.
Big gulp. See you out there.
Yep.
Man, so there's just so much to react to there. So I always tell my wife, it is not Christmas until I've watched National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation and A Christmas Story, and then it's Christmas.
Yeah.
I have to watch those first. And I honestly could watch them any time of the year, not just at Christmas. But yeah, those are great, great movies. There was one in between that I had literally no idea what it was.
Weird Science.
No, I knew what that was. It was the one before that. I don't remember what it was.
Do the Right Thing.
What's that?
Do the Right Thing. So in the 80s, Spike Lee did this movie. I mean, This was the movie where Rosie Perez got her start. Samuel Jackson's in there. Martin Lawrence is in there. I mean, they were all nobodies. This was the movie that launched all their careers.
Wow.
Oh, huge. I mean, just unbelievable cast. About a guy named Sal who owns a pizzeria shop.
Oh, okay.
So it centers around Sal's famous pizzeria. So you can see why I'm a little biased.
Yeah, exactly.
Growing up, everybody would always say, because there's a famous line in there where they say, "Yo, Sal, we're going to boycott your fat pasta ass." And sure enough, I heard that every day at high school for years.
Now I'm just thinking of Samuel L. Jackson saying that.
Oh, no, Samuel, he was great. He was the senior love daddy.
Samuel
Jackson played a radio DJ, and he was a senior love daddy. And he would say, he would always say, "That's the double truth, Ruth."
Man.
And so, oh, it was great. I mean, I could quote every line in that movie. Just unbelievable cast. There was a famous comedian there who died a few years back. I can't remember his name now. He played this character named, I don't know if I should mention it, but that's his name. His name was Sweet Dick Willie.
Okay.
And he would just go rambling on about all kinds of just wonderful things. And the movie's just hilarious. It's about stereotypes. It's about racism. It's about, you know, this Italian guy who owns a pizzeria in a black neighborhood. And this one guy wanted to boycott him because he wasn't showcasing African-Americans on his wall. It's a very funny, but yet drama, and It's a great, it's all centered around a 24-hour day, just one day.
Okay. So that's
funny.
It
starts in the morning and ends at night.
So I knew that I, as I asked these questions, that I was going to get movies, and I've watched a lot of movies, but that I had never heard of, and that's legitimately something I have never heard of until this moment. I'm going to have to watch it.
Great movie. Very funny. But yeah, definitely hard racial tones and stereotypes, but it broke a lot of barriers. It was a groundbreaking movie. Unbelievable cast. I think it won a couple. I think did it win an Oscar for something? I might have.
Wow.
If not, it definitely won a Golden Globe. I mean, it was a very, very powerful movie.
Okay.
So but funny at the same time. My friends and I would just bust jokes on it all day. I mean, it was written to be lighthearted, but in covering a serious matter. But Spike Lee, it's probably his best movie ever.
Spike Lee joint. Every good movie's quotable. Movie's quotable.
Tons of great quotes. Tons of great lines.
What's on your music app? What are your Spotify, your Pandora, whatever app? I'm not hip with all the music apps. So.
Definitely a lot of hip hop and rap. You know, I can
which era?
I'm listening to the current stuff right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm getting into some of the trap music, and I like EDM music too. So I think when I'm at work and I'm just wanting to like get stuff done, you know, I'll throw on some Green Lantern or some, you know, Kill the Noise and just start rocking out. And EDM really keeps me going.
Man, writing code and rocking out.
Yep. If you see me standing at my desk and I'm jamming, people know it. There's some good things happening.
So you do a standing desk then?
Yeah.
Okay. How's that?
Oh, it's great. It's
great. Really?
I keeps my blood flowing and keeps me focused and jamming. When I sit down, I get too complacent.
I feel like it would hurt my back after a while, but I've seen people use them.
Oh, they're great.
Okay. All right.
We got a new digs. And so at our new digs, they've equipped every desk now has a automatic lift. So you can go either way. We have automatic digital controls. So we can set it to whatever heights we want and then pre-program it. So it's fun.
That's awesome. So yeah. Speaking of automatic, something I found out, and I didn't partake because I didn't realize it at the time. So I'm working for Search Discovery. I've been to the corporate office one time, and at the corporate office, they have, among other things, they have a small kegerator that when you fill it up, it takes a picture of the person filling it up and tweets it out. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Somebody told me about that. So not in any like malicious, like look who's drinking on the job way.
Right. I'm like, what are they trying to punish people or what is this?
Look how much we can use technology to be obnoxious way.
Okay. So that's almost a recruiting.
That's a thing.
They're using it as a recruiting tactic.
I guess so. Come to Search Discovery, drink on the job and we'll tweet it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll get people coming to the door for
right,
sure.
Right. So your name sounds Italian, and forgive me if it's not.
Yep.
It's Neil. I know what I'm expecting, but maybe it's going to be different.
It's definitely pasta.
Okay. All right.
So. I eat pasta multiple times a week.
Okay, yeah, so I went into this with my mob movie theme and your name sounding very Italian. I was like, maybe I'm going to offend him. I don't know him well enough to know that I'm not going to offend him by doing that.
Perfectly good.
But I'm so I just took a DNA test, and I had always thought that I was like German-Irish and whatnot, but I married into a very Italian family. Last name Picciano, right? You say it with your hands.
Yep.
And you know they're very into their heritage, and so we love pasta. And they always joke with me, given like so I love really old music, like Frank Sinatra, that type of music. I'm way into mob movies, and I read about that. I'm a history buff, so I read about that stuff all the time. And they always joke with me, "You wish you were born Italian." So my father-in-law,
he's saying that about everybody.
Right, okay. Right. My father-in-law, it's funny, took a DNA test a couple of months ago and found out that he's actually primarily Swedish, right? And he's only 14% Italian, and his last name is Picciano. My last name is Stoops, not Italian at all. I took a DNA test and found out that I am also 14% Italian.
Wow.
Look at that.
Hey,
I'm just as Italian
up,
as you.
How you doing?
Exactly. So now he's going to try to, because he's in the Columbus Italian Club. He always jokes with me about how if I do anything wrong, him and his Italian buddies are going
to
roll me up in a carpet. So now I get to join the Italian Club with my last name being Scoops. So, which for me is awesome, but other people are going to look at me funny.
Well, we always say there's two types of people in the world. There's Italians, and then there's those that want to be.
Exactly.
Right. So, yeah, we take a pretty strong pride in being
Italian. Cool, man. So
that's awesome. Yeah, and I love you know, the Godfather movies and Now, some of my family members don't. Some of them do take offense to it and don't embrace that. They didn't like The Sopranos.
Really?
I thought The Sopranos was great. I get the negative stereotype.
Oh, sure, yeah. They even talk about that in The Sopranos quite often. It's amazing.
It is what it is. I mean, everybody, you know, everybody's got a history and somewhat, you know, I mean, at one time we were the Romans. We were the greatest empire on earth.
Yeah,
you know?
You're looking at them.
we conquered everything at one time.
Yep.
So it is what it is. You know, so I always go back to that, like the Roman Empire, the greatest empire on earth. What are you talking about?
Exactly.
So you take the good with the bad.
Yep.
And, you know, we walk around with some real big pride. It's great.
No, that's awesome. No, I truly wish I was Italian.
Family,
had a cool
Sal,
last name.
We're all Sal and Vince's. It's Sal Vince.
Or Paul, Pauly.
We get all Vince's and Sal's and Tony's. And yeah.
Tony.
Vince, Sal, Tony. Yeah. That's primarily 80% of the guys in my family are Vince, Sal, or Tony.
Yeah, that's funny. So where can people follow you?
Twitter is definitely a great place. I do, you know, some tweets over there at Sal Surra, S-A-L-S-U-R-R-A. I used to be really big on Google+. I ran an SEO community there. I had a WordPress community there.
How's that working out?
I haven't been posting over there.
Right.
Don't follow me on Google+, because I'm not going to be over there. I mean, I still check in once in a while over there, but that's actually where I have my biggest followers, because I was one of the beta testers when Plus came out. So, you know, I had a strong following, and I used to post. I was one of the first to create groups. I was one of the first to create communities. I was one of the first. I really liked it, and I'm just disappointed that they couldn't keep it going in the right way. And, you know, it is what it is now. But so, yeah, I think my primary network is definitely Twitter, where if you know, want to reach out. And, you know, I definitely tweet SEO stuff over there, but some fantasy football.
Yeah, I mostly just yell about the Browns, but that's what I use.
Get some Star Wars stuff in there, too, because I do love my Star Wars. I go to the celebrations. I dress up. I'm pretty fanatical. The next celebration is going to be local here in Chicago for 2019. So I'm already getting my tickets and getting my costumes ready. And I'll be hopefully getting out on stage again for the next celebration.
Cool.
I made it on the live broadcast for the 2015, dressed as C-3PO on stage with Anthony Daniels.
Who's Anthony Daniels?
C-3PO.
Oh, he's C-3PO. Wow.
The real actor, one. The real
okay.
Actor that play. I was on stage dressed as C-3PO, getting to meet my.
I'm sure I just drew the ire of all of the Star Wars nerds.
Yeah, but I got to meet my hero right there. And
man,
he saw me in the crowd. I was actually sitting in the crowd dressed as C-3PO, and he was doing a panel. And he stopped like mid sentence on stage and was like, "Wait, you over there? Come on up here.
Get up here."
And I'm like, I'm dressed as C-3PO, and I'm walking up there. I'm on the live broadcast, and
wow,
yeah, it was a highlight. I was pretty stoked.
Man, I've never got to do such cool stuff, man. I wouldn't know what to do.
I try to push it sometimes. I've flown a plane. I've flown a Cessna. I've done some barrel rolls in a Cessna. You know, I try to push it a few times. You know, I'm looking to maybe sky jump, you know, do some sort of jump that's a bucket list thing. You know, my brother, I appreciate his service. He was in the military for 10 years. He used to jump out of helicopters. He was a pararescuer. So he would be the one, he jumped out of airplanes and helicopters and he would save people. He got a few medals for saving lives.
Wow.
I made sure I called him yesterday and thanked him for his service. And
very important stuff.
Yeah. I want to do it too, though. I'm going on a plane.
Well, I appreciate your time. Awesome conversation. Yeah. Thank you so much for staying on so long and sharing everything and being candid. I think that's why I'm doing this, to have candid conversations and to get into, I want to share tips, right? But I also know I'm not the smartest person in the room, and I don't plan to be, and I never will be. And I just want to talk to as many smart people from as many different backgrounds as possible. So appreciate it.
You're on the right track, and I think you've got a great head on your shoulders too. So don't knock yourself down. I think you're doing some wonderful things too. So I'm glad you're doing this, and I think it's a great help for the community as well. So thank you.
Cool, man. Thank you.
Thank you for watching the Page 2 Podcast. If you like this podcast, you can support this show by tapping the link in this episode's description or visit anchor.fm/Page 2 Podcast to become a monthly supporter. That's anchor.fm/Page2Podcast. You can also listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and more. Follow me on Twitter @JacobStoops. Thanks again, everybody, and see you next episode.